Carolyn visited an open day at the East Anglian Air Ambulance and ended up having a chat with Dr. Rob Major, Deputy Medical Director of this important service.
Dr. Major, thank you very much for taking the time to talk about your work with the emergency air ambulance. Could you start by telling me a little bit about what most of your calls are? Do you call them shouts like the RNLI? Or?
Yeah, of course. I suppose the clinical team sort of call them jobs. So when the phone goes off, we'll often say, oh, we have another job. Yeah, they can be called shouts. And of course, we respond in the aircraft and in the car, so it depends on where the job is, whether we go by aircraft or whether we go by car. Sometimes that's a bit weather dependent as well, because although our aircraft flies at night time and during the day, sometimes the weather can mean that we're not able to fly, so we'll go in the car. The majority of the jobs we get, actually a lot of people think we go to road traffic collisions mainly, or trauma, people falling, which we do go to, but actually certainly within the east of England, across both of our bases, the jobs that we go to more often than any other are medical emergencies. So about a third of our jobs are medical emergencies, or we class them as medical emergencies, and they're mainly cardiac issues. So people who have had a heart attack or have actually suffered a cardiac arrest. So that's the most common job that we would go to throughout a 24-hour period. And then we do about sort of 27% of trauma jobs. The next job that we go to frequently are road traffic collisions or trauma, where someone's been hit or fallen, knocked off their bike, hit by a car. And then we have a whole load of other jobs that we go to, certainly within an area that's more rural, like the east of England, which are a little bit more unique, perhaps, like horse riding incidents, or agricultural incidents, or other medical things where people have had seizures or other types of incidents.
And who decides to get you involved rather than calling 999 for an ambulance?
That's a great question. Yeah, so we work really closely in partnership with the East of England Ambulance Service Trust, and we effectively work on their behalf. So although we're a charity and we work sort of entirely independently of the ambulance service, we don't get any funding from the ambulance service, it's all charitable, we work really closely with them. A lot of their paramedics are part of our clinical service, so fly on our helicopter and drive our vehicles and work with the doctors. But the ambulance service look at all of the 999 calls that come in throughout the whole of the East of England, which is 4,000 plus 999 calls a day. And then they have a special desk called the critical care desk. So that sits in one of the control rooms, and they have normally one of our paramedics who sits on there 24/7 looking at all the 999 calls that come in and selecting the ones that the helicopter or the critical care team would be best placed to go to. So, if a cardiac arrest call came in, or if there was a large road traffic collision, the clinician who sits on the critical care desk would have a look at that job. They might be able to listen into the 999 call. They might be able to look back at some of the notes from the 999 call taker, and then they would decide if it's something that we could give additional help to. The ambulance is always already gone, so quite often we get to these incidents well after the ambulance service, but they sort of select the more severe jobs for us to do. And they do that for not just EAAA and the East Anglian Air Ambulance, but all the other air ambulances that work in and around this part of the world.
I think before I came to your open day, I had a misconception that you actually lift the casualty as safely as possible onto the helicopter and off to A&E to be treated. But that's not the case, is it?
No, that's true. We use the helicopter as a fast taxi service for the clinical team, and it works really well doing that, especially at night time, so we can get all over the county very, very quickly. Because we need to get our medical resource to the casualty as quickly as we can, so the helicopter is definitely the best way of doing that. We do often carry patients in the helicopter to hospital, but actually, more often than not, we'll go in the ambulance. So the ambulance service will often already be with the patient when we get there. And there are lots of reasons why we might go in the ambulance. Sometimes it's easier, we have more space, we have more light, we have better heating, it's less noisy, we don't have to wear helmets in a ambulance, and it might be some of our sickest patients, actually loading them on the helicopter, it's quite difficult to treat them while we're flying them to hospital. We can, but we're quite limited on space, whereas in a nice big ambulance we have a lot more ability to carry on delivering some of the critical care that we need to do. But if there's a really big time advantage of going in the helicopter, say you're on the North Norfolk coast and you know you're unfortunate enough to fall over or get run over, then we would definitely want to be flying you from the North Norfolk coast, maybe to the Major Trauma Centre in Cambridge, because that would take, you know, an hour and a half or 2 hours on the road, even at night, you know, with the blue lights on. So we would look to fly. But yeah, it's probably the minority of patients we take on the helicopter.
Right. And just an aside, how long does it take you to get to Cambridge in the helicopter?
Oh, it's not too bad. So from here, it's a bit wind dependent. So in the east of England, quite often the wind comes from the middle of the country and blows out to sea. So it comes from the southwest, which means that it's slower going to Cambridge and much quicker coming back to base. But from here in Norwich, if we were to lift here, we could be at Addenbrookes in, depending on the wind, sort of 20 minutes maybe.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, which is really quick. Obviously from the North Norfolk coast, we can maybe get there if the wind's in the right direction in 20 to 30 minutes. And it would take easily an hour and a half if we were to drive from the North Norfolk coast on blue lights in the back of an ambulance. So it really does give our patients a real time advantage if they've got some time critical element to their illness.
So you're treating them as you go?
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that you need specialist equipment.
Yes, we do.
Could you describe something of what you're carrying?
Yeah, of course. So we've got lots of equipment that the ambulance service don't carry because we're a doctor and a specialist paramedic. They are allowed to do things that the regular ambulance service wouldn't do. So the ambulance service do a lot of the basic first aid and injury really, really well, but we've got lots of additional things. So one of the main things that we do for patients is we can deliver them a general anaesthetic. So a bit like if you're having your appendix out in hospital, you know, you would have an anaesthetist give you some lovely drugs to send you off nicely to sleep, and then we would take over your breathing. The ambulance service can't do that because it takes some really special, powerful drugs, and we have to have a ventilator. So we have a big ventilator that we will put you on. It's much nicer for patients who are obviously critically injured. And it obviously gives us a lot of ability to look after them like they're on an intensive care unit. So we effectively bring all the kit and equipment, or most of the kit and equipment of an intensive care unit. So a ventilator. We obviously have all the kit and equipment to be able to connect their lungs up with a ventilator. So we do this procedure called intubation, where we'll put a plastic tube into their lungs and connect them to the ventilator. We carry blood and blood products, which the ambulance service don't carry. So obviously that's something that for patients who have had a nasty road traffic collision or have had some injury where they're bleeding, we can top them up with blood. So we carry blood. And we carry quite a lot of additional diagnostic equipment. So we can do lots of testing that the ambulance service wouldn't be able to do that helps us identify what might be wrong with patients a bit more accurately. So we have an ultrasound device. So if anyone listening has been into hospital and maybe had an ultrasound test of their heart, or you know, in pregnancy you have an ultrasound test, we carry those devices so that we can look mainly for bleeding. A lot of bleeding internally you can't see, so we use an ultrasound device for that. And we have a whole load of additional extra bits and pieces that help us deliver care. So one of the things we're particularly forward-thinking in here at the East Anglian Air Ambulance is getting people's blood pressure by actually putting small needles in their arteries and measuring their blood pressure. So rather than the blood pressure device you have in your general practitioners that sort of squeezes your arm, we'll actually put a little cannula in patients' arteries, and that gives us a much more accurate blood pressure, and it will give us it constantly beat to beat. So that allows us to tailor their medical care a lot more accurately than you would get just by using a normal blood pressure device.
All right. So you're A&E in the air, really?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's certainly something that we try and do. So we try and bring the hospital to the patient and then take the patient to the hospital. And a lot of the things that we do now are even sometimes going beyond what you would get in A&E. So, you know, we deliver all the care that an A&E department would give you, and now we can deliver some of the care that an intensive care would deliver as well. So a lot of the time when we hand patients over to hospital, we'll be handing them over to the intensive care team, who will then just sort of take them maybe for a CT scan, which we can't do, some more diagnostics. And then take them up onto the intensive care unit before they then have whatever other treatment they need, which might be an operation. It might be they need to go and see a cardiologist to unblock an artery in their heart. But we sort of hand them over now more to intensive care.
So they're ready for...
Yes.
They're absolutely ready and prepped for the next
anything
stage.
They need, yeah, absolutely.
Goodness me.
Yeah.
Mm. But that's not all you do, is it? You're very hot on aftercare, I think.
Yes, that's right. So most people will, you know, recognise the big yellow helicopter, and obviously the clinical team, you know, and looking after patients, but we have loads of other things we do. So one of the things we're really proud of here is we have an aftercare service, which is a team made up of clinicians. So they're nurses and paramedics. Lots of them still work either within the NHS or within the ambulance service, and they do time with us looking after our patients. So they will follow up patients, so and relatives, it's not just patients. So there's a service that they provide so that any relative or bystander or patient that's been involved when we've been there on scene, they'll either contact them directly, or if anyone rings in to ask, they'll have that relationship with them. They do a lot of signposting to things that might help families that they may not know is there. So, you know, victim compensation schemes for road traffic collisions. But also they give the story normally for the patient, because a lot of our patients don't remember us looking after them because a lot of them are unconscious. So it gives patients an opportunity to come and talk to the team that look after them, sort of fill in those gaps in their memory of when they were really sick, and also see where they were cared for, and ask questions of the team. And it's lovely for us as well to meet patients, because, you know, we go to a lot of patients who sadly don't do very well, but when we have patients who do really brilliantly and go home again, it's really lovely to meet them when they come and visit.
And one of the most interesting areas of the visit was going into your debrief room.
Yes.
With the photograph of the scene, you can mock up a scene to debrief. Could you say a little more about that?
Yeah, so our immersion room has been really helpful. It's a sort of innovative, really innovative room. So just to describe to everyone who's listening, it's a room without any windows with projectors all around where we can project, using a 360-degree video camera, a scene. So we could make it look like the inside of a forest, or we could make it look like a road traffic collision scene. We've got ones of the London Underground in there already. So we've got lots of different areas. And we use that room for lots of different things. Primarily, we use it for training. So when the team maybe aren't on a job, they'll come and we've got some mannequins in there so they can practice doing all of their things that we do every day. It's a really important part of what we do.
Is it a great transition to move from a hospital environment to practice medicine to being up in the air? Or
it's very different. So most of the doctors and paramedics, in fact all the doctors and paramedics we have really, work already or still work within the NHS. There's only a few of us. There are some of us, but there are only a very few of us that are employed full-time by the charity. So most sort of this is a second job for them. But it's very different medicine. So obviously being in a hospital can be quite difficult, and you can have lots of really unwell, critically injured patients. But it's normally warm, it's normally light. You've normally got lots of people around you to help. Our teams are used to working in the rain, in a ditch, in the dark, just with two of them and the ambulance service around them. And of course, you don't know any of those people. So one thing we spend a lot of time training for is to sort of be able to make a sort of a flash mob, a team of people whom you don't know, nobody knows each other really, and be able to be really effective looking after a single patient sort of all at once. And that can be quite challenging.
So two of you go out, two clinicians go out.
That's right, yeah. So sometimes now, more often than not, we'll have three people on the team. So either two doctors and a paramedic, or two paramedics and a doctor. But we always go out with a doctor and a paramedic. Okay.
How many people did you go out to last year?
So we're a really busy service. Obviously, we've got our base at Norwich, so people who live in Norfolk and Suffolk will be used to sort of seeing the yellow aircraft. We've got one in Cambridge. We did just short of 3,000 missions last year. And of course, we actually end up treating far more patients than that, because some of the patients we go to, some of the jobs we go to have multiple patients. So yeah, we might go to a road traffic collision where we actually sort of meet or look after two or three patients. We can only really ever take one patient to hospital, so we normally pick the worst or sickest patient. But we quite often, look after more patients than jobs we go out to, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Do you think that this service should be funded centrally?
That's really interesting. And actually, I think there are different places in the world where the HEMS, you know, the helicopter emergency medical services, are funded by the government. And I think actually, because of all the issues with austerity and with government funding, I think that probably wouldn't work very well. We're completely charity funded, we're an expensive organisation, but we deliver amazing care for our patients. And I would worry that if it was centrally government funded, they wouldn't be able to give us the investment that we need to deliver this level of healthcare.
Yeah. It's quite phenomenal that it's funded by donations, yeah. isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's about £19 million a year we need, and you know, every single penny of that goes on the service, effectively. So, you know, there's, like I said, we're all of us that work here are really, you know, we always think about the pound that's put in the pot by someone and what that's going to be used for. So there's, you know, it's a very lean organisation. It works very quickly, and very lean in terms of how we do it, and we try and make sure all of that money can get to the patients. Because that's effectively how we're able to deliver the service. Mm. And I don't know if you can hear that, but that's the team going out now. So that's the alarm call for the team to go now. Yeah.
Right, you need to go.
No, I don't, but that, they will be going.
But anyway, that's a perfect point to end, I think. And thank you so much for your really valuable insight into your very, very valuable work.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.